Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah is Lamed Zayin. We are starting today on Lamed Vav Lamed Beis at the Mishnah. So, and this parak, well, obviously now after having detailed all the dalminim, and we went through all the specifications of each one of the dalminim, we had a Mishnah that dedicated itself to each one of the minim. We've covered in order of the Mishnayos, Lulav, Hadas, Arava, and now Esrog. So now we return to a more general discussion regarding, so now that I have the dalminim, so how do I wrap them up? So we know already that the Esrog is to remain independent, even though it's going to be held together with the other three minim, but it remains independent, and that's all predicated on a vav. When the Torah introduces us to the dal minim, so it says, it's lukakhtum lachem b'yam harishon priyetz hadar. Now the next word is not v'kapos tamarim, but the next word is kapos tamarim. So there's no vav achibor, there's no connective vav, and so as a result of that, so the Esrog remains separate from the others, separate but together. Okay, so you're holding it in another hand. In fact, we're going to be at the end of today's daf. So we're going to say that the Esrog is held in the left hand, the Lulav and the other two Minim are held in the right hand. We'll go over why that is at the end of today's daf. And good. And that's the Lekicha. That's the mitzvah of Ulekach Kamachem. On top of that, we also know that the Lulav is going to be bound together with the Hadassim and the Aravos. Now, there is a machlokus amongst the Tanaim, which we've already discussed a number of times in our Masechta, and that is whether or not that is a requirement. Or is it just simply a hiddur, something which beautifies it? So it's a machlokus between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rav Yehuda's position is it's a requirement. Lulav tzarich eged. It's absolutely necessary. And according to Rav Yehuda, if you don't have an eged, so you just simply failed on the mitzvah. The mitzvah demands, it requires that there be mu'ugad. It be bound together. Meanwhile, Shita's Chachamim is, no, it's not required. It's just simply a hiddur. It beautifies the mitzvah. It makes it look nice and neat and organized. But there's no absolute requirement to bind it together. Okay? With all that stated, so now we start with our Mishnah. Ein ogdin es alulav ela bemino divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda demands that not only do you have to be ma'agid, but you have to be ma'agid using a species of either lulav or hadasim or ravos. It could be that according to Rabbi Yehuda, I'm not sure if this is correct, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, maybe you could use the branches of the esrog. I don't know. I could speculate. I'm not going to bother. But anyway, but you have to, let's just keep it nice and simple. You got to use for the egged purposes, you got to use something of the lulav branch or the hadas or the arava. It has to be bimino. Now, the reason why is because Rav Yehuda l'shita, so the Gemara is going to point this out. Rav Yehuda says that the egged is required. And since it's required, so if I put in some other species, so then I'm in violation of Baal Tosif. So we're going to get to that in the Gemara. Rabbi Meir Omer, afilu bechut, b'mishicha. Rabbi Meir says, no, you could use a string. It's, in other words, according to Rabbi Meir, the reason why you're tying it up is just simply to organize it. It's not a requirement. It's just a hider. And you could use whatever material you want. Amr Rabbi Meir, ma'isa b'ancha Yerushalayim, shal yogdim es lulavehem, b'gimonio shel zahav. And Rabbi Meir says, look, I was in Yerushalayim, and I saw that what the elders did over there, the anche Yerushalayim, is that when they wrapped their lulav, they did so with some sort of gold bands. Okay, and clearly for the purposes of beautifying, and clearly they didn't use the min. They didn't use the lulav or the hadas or the arava to bind it up. They bound it up with some other foreign material. So Amr lo bimino hayu ogdim osam alamata. And so Rabbi Huda's response is, you didn't look carefully enough. Because if you would have looked at their egged really carefully, you would have seen that underneath the gold bands of what they had lulav. In other words, they wrapped it with min, with mino, and then overlaying that, they had the gold. But that was just an overlay. But the actual egged itself was mino. So Rav Yehuda says, if you would have looked more carefully, you would have seen in actuality that the egged was actually bimino. Okay, a lot to discuss here. In the Mishnah, the Gemara begins the discussion. Amar Rava v'afilu b'siv v'afilu mi'ikara didikla. Okay, so Rava now is going to be commenting on this sheet of Rav Yehuda that when you're wrapping it up, you have to use mino. Rava says that's true, you have to use mino, but could be any part of the palm tree. It could be the bark that overlays the palm tree. It's not really a bark, whatever. Whatever. Whatever material that comes off the palm tree, that's what you could use. Or afilu beikar didikla, you could use a root. In other words, it could be wood. Now, obviously, wood is going to be really hard to use as an ogade. In other words, the whole point over here is that you want to wrap it up. So what you're going to do is that you're going to treat it. In other words, you're going to cut it really thin. You're going to render it so that it can be used as an egged. The point that he's making is that for Rabbi Yehuda, this has nothing to do with beautification. This has everything to do with being ma'aged, just simply to wrap it up, because that's the requirement. And so therefore, you could use whatever part of the tree you want, as long as it's part of the tree. So the Amarava, my Tamid Rav Yehuda, Kasav Lulav Sarachegit. So here the Gemara spells it out. I know I've been saying it pretty clearly since we've been doing the Mishnah, but now the Gemara is actually articulating. The Gemara says the basis of Rav Yehuda is because there is an egg of a requirement. And if I were to bring some other species to do the egged, to be ma'aged, so then what we are in violation of is Baal Tosef, if you're adding to the mitzvah. The mitzvah demands that there be dalaminim and only dalaminim. And once I add a fifth min, so then it's a violation of Baal Tosef. The Amarava Minamina la Desivi Kara de Dikla Mina Dilulava Hu. Now how do I know I'm right about this, says Rava? That when Rav Yehuda demands that it be from the Lulav, it could be any part of the Lulav. How do I know that? And so what the Gemara is going to do is launch into a proof to show that according to Rav Yehuda, it could be any part of the Lulav. The proof is going to be a little bit lengthy, and we're going to get a little bit sidetracked, but when we finish the proof, obviously I'll indicate when we get to it, so it will be clear that Lefi Shitas Rav Yehuda could be any part of the palm tree. It doesn't necessarily have to be the frond. It doesn't have to be the leaf. It could be any part of the palm tree. Detanya, so how do I get there? So I get there in the following. So first of all, Besukas Teshuva Sukkah Shel Kol Davar Divrei Rav Meir. So according to Shitas Rav Meir, what are you using to build your sukkah? Whatever you want. Now when we say sukkah over here, we really mean the schach. Okay. And so according to Rav Meir, you could use whatever you want. Now when I say whatever you want, so let's recall what we learned back in the first parak of the Masechta, second parak of the Masechta. It's not whatever you want. It has to grow from the ground. It has to be detached from the ground. It can't be fashioned into a kli. So, but what he means by that is that any organic material that you want to use, you could use. It doesn't matter where the branches come from. As long as it is a branch or leaves or fronds, there's no limitation of what kind of tree you could use for your schach. Rabbi Yehuda Amar in Sukkah Dahagis Ela Bedal Minim Shibalulav. And Rabbi Yehuda has a really interesting shita, and I think this is the first time in the Masechta that we're seeing this shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Schach can only be composed of dalaminim. That's it. Meaning so that when you make your schach, you can use hadasim, you could use a ravos, you could use a lulav, but you can't use anything else. Now, esrog is going to be a little bit tricky. The esrog, the actual fruit itself, well, that's mekabel tuma. It's a fruit. It's mekabel tuma. You're not allowed to be mesachech with davar mekabel tuma. So maybe by the esrog, we're once again looking at the tree of the esrog, not necessarily the fruit of the esrog. I may be right about that again. I don't know. But anyway, but the point is that for Reb Yehuda, that's it. Those are the only acceptable materials that you use for your schach. How does he know that? Where in the Torah does it indicate that you can only use dalminim for your schach? The answer, of course, is it does not say it in the Torah. So how does he arrive at that conclusion? Via a limud, a drasha. Specifically a kavachomer. The Gemara goes through the kavachomer. So the Hadin Osein, and the Gemara says, and now let's construct the argument for Rav Yehuda. Malu lav she'ino oig balelos kabiyamim, ino noig ela ba'arba minim. So when it comes to lulav, so when is the time for the performance of the mitzvah? That is during the day, not at night. And meanwhile, the limitation is that you can only use from the dal minim. Sukkah she'noig es balelos kabiyamim. Now sukkah, the mitzvah of sukkah is both day and night. So now it is a more extensive mitzvah. Okay, now, as far as kavachomer goes, this is a tricky kavachomer. Meaning because the duration of time is longer by the sukkah, so the Gemara is assuming, that's more strict. Okay, I know you could argue, you could counter argue, but right now that's the argument, that's the basis of the argument. So now that we say that sukkah is stricter than lulav, and lulav you can only use dalaminim, so now the argument is, eno din shlo tehei ala ba'arba minim. So it must be now that by sukkah, in order to construct the schach for the sukkah, you're only limited to the dalaminim. That's a kal v'chomer. So it's hard. It's a hard kal v'chomer to understand. Look, kal v'chomers are logical arguments, and with logical arguments, in other words, the logic is not absolutely ironclad foolproof. You can argue. But right now, that's the construction of a kal v'chomer on behalf of Rav Yehuda. So Amru lo, so they say to Rav Yehuda, no good. Because kol din sha'ata dan tchilasa la'achmin v'sofa la'akel, eino din. A kavachomer that could result in a kula, that's not a good kavachomer. This could result in a kula. What kula can this result in? So we turn to the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. So lam matzah arba aminim ye yoshev avatel, yoshev avatel, comma. So number one, so let's say, that's really limiting. I can only make my schach from dal aminim? I don't have. right? Back in the day in Europe, they barely got dalaminim. And now I'm going to need enough, an abundance of dalaminim I'm going to use in my schach. I simply don't have. And now what do you expect me to do? Not sit in the sukkah? All because of a kavachomer. Anytime a kavachomer results in a kula, meaning obviously the kavachomer presents a chumrah. But if that chumrah is going to present a kula, i.e., the nullification of the mitzvah of sukkah altogether, so that's not, you can't construct such a kavachomer. And v'atar amar b'sukkah teishu shivas yamim, sukkah shekol davar. And on top of that, just a simple reading of the pasuk. The pasuk says that you're sitting in the sukkah for 7 days, and the Torah doesn't modify, the Torah doesn't limit. Torah says it could be any sukkah. So with no limitation. And so that's number two. And number three, v'chein be'ezra omer. And open up Sefer Ezra. Now it happens to be Sefer Nehemiah, but again, the idea that Ezra and Nehemiah was broken up into two separate Sfarim, that's a modern innovation. I don't mean modern 20th century, but I do mean modern, however. It's more in the recent past than it was in the old days. Right? In the old days, it was one Sefer. In fact, the Chav Dalet Sifrei Tanakh, 24 books of Tanakh, so you count it up, so you're only counting Ezra. Meaning, if I counted Ezra and Nehemiah, so then it would be 25 books of Tanakh, and there are 24. The Masorah is that there's 24. So, okay, good. So anyway, so anytime the Gemara quotes from Sefer Nehemiah, it always calls it Sefer Ezra. So, V'chein be'Ezra Omer, Su'ahar v'eviu alei zayis, v'alei eit shemen, v'alei hadas, v'alei tamarim, v'alei eit zavos, and v'asu sukos, kakasuv, kakasuv. I'm sure there are, questions of gears in terms of what the precise wording of the pasuk is. Anyway, the Navi, Nehemiah, is instructing, look, sukkos is coming, so here's what you do. Gather your vegetation, because you're going to need, number one, dalaminim, and you're going to need also to construct a sukkah. And look at what he's telling them to gather, right? Just look at the first item on the list. Alei zayis. Take the branches of an olive tree. What are you using the branches of the olive tree for? So here's what you're not using it for. You're not using it for dalaminim, obviously. So you're obviously using it for schach. So you're telling me, Rabbi Yehuda, that the only thing you could use for schach is only dalaminim. I'm quoting a pasuk in Nehemiah, where clearly they were using other types of vegetation for the schach. So Rabbi Yehuda now is going to have a really tough time. Those are three arguments against the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So if Rabbi Yehuda savor hani l'defanos alei hadas v'alei tamarim v'alei eitz avos l'schach. So in defense of Rabbi Yehuda, it's a hard position to defend. But in defense of his position, well, here's what we'll say. That the alei zayis, that's for the walls of the sukkah. And once the pasuk gets to the alei tamarim and the alei eitz avos, that's for the schach of the sukkah. Okay, you could suggest such a reading of that pasuk in Nehemiah. Certainly a difficult reading of the pasuk, but you could suggest it. You could defend Rav Yehuda. Okay, anyway, you realize we're not there yet. Meaning all this was just simply to point out that the various parts of the palm tree are considered halachically a lulav. Now, why is that important? Because remember, in the Mishnah, Rav Yehuda says there's a requirement to be ma'ageh. Rava commented in the Gemara that it doesn't have to be a frond, it doesn't have to be the leaf of the palm tree. It could be any part of the palm tree. How do I know that? We're almost there getting to the point. Like I said, the Gemara is going to take a minute for the Gemara to get to the point. We're almost there. Vitzenan. Now, we learned in the Mishnah. So again, now what did we just establish? That according to Rav Yehuda, the only acceptable material to use for schach is only from dalaminim. Now, Vitzenan, and we learned in the Mishnah, Mestachim and Nesarim, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So you can be Mestachich using Nesarim, boards. And boards meaning the, remember we had a discussion in the first perek, if the boards are too wide, so then there's a gzera of tikra, it looks like the roof of your house, but as long as it's not too wide, and remember we had a discussion over there, what does that mean, it's not too wide? But as long as it's not too wide, so then it can be used for schach. Now, let's put these two pieces of information together. Number one, Rabbi Yehuda says they can only use dalaminim. Number two, we're using a board, a beam. Now, and it's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, this is Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Where's the beam coming from? It must be coming from a lulav tree. Has to. Can't come from anything else. Now the Gemara says, now we have proven successfully that according to Rabbi Yehuda, when we say that you could use anything from the lulav tree, it literally could be any part of the lulav tree. Okay, so the Gemara says, good. So we made the point. So that now, according to Rav Yehuda, yes, you have to bind it up, and yes, you can only use a lulav to bind it up. Using any other species would be a violation of Baal Tosif, but it doesn't have to be the frond. It could be even the branches. It could be even the bark. It could be even the tree itself. Okay. So the Gemara says, now, you tell me that according to Rav Yehuda, the only viable schach that you can use can only be derived from dal minim. Are you right about that? Consider now the following brisa. Sichacha ben esarim shel erez. If let's say we use cedar wood, sheyesh b'hem dal tfachim, devra kopsula, in b'hem dal tfachim, Rabbi Meir posted Rav Yehuda machshir. So, and if the cedar lumber is less than four tfachim, we have a machloks between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. And remember the Gemara back it was a Yudalid in Sukkah. The Gemara said that if it's less than three tvachim, everyone agrees it's fine. Anyway, the part to focus on right now for us is that what kind of wood are you using? Cedar wood. And umo dev Rebbe Meir Shim Yesh Bein Nesel Neser Kamali Neser Sheminich Psal Beineim Ukshera. And then a point which we've gone over numerous times, which is not germane to our discussion, is that according to Rebbe Meir, if let's say the boards are in fact four tvachim, but there are spaces in between, and you fill in those spaces with kashrus chach, so then it's going to be fine. And what exactly is he talking about? And the proper configuration in eight amos. And okay, and we're not going to go through all that right now because it's not germane to our discussion. What is germane to our discussion is eitz erez. You're using cedar wood. According to Rav Yehuda, isn't cedar wood no good? So my erez hadas. So the Gemara says, okay, so yeah, I know it's difficult, but what we'll say over here is that the erez under discussion is actually hadas. Now, it's not normal that when we're describing the hadas, we call it as erez, but the Gemara says, but it's possible. Kedarava, just give me a moment. Kedarava baravuna da'amar, rava baravuna amar be rav, asara mine arazin hain. There are actually 10 different variations of cedar. Shenemra, teme midbar, erashita v'hadas. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, I think it's the third parak. Anyway, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah over there goes through exactly what the ten variations are. Anyway, one of them is the hadas, so we could say that. In fact, for Rav Yehuda, we're going to have to say that because again, we can't have a steer within the sheet of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda only limits it to the dal minim in terms of what you could use for schach. We have a brisa that talks about atzei erez. It must be the erez over there is talking about hadas.
Why couldn't you just say Abel and switch all
your mirrors? Yeah, the Gemara would prefer. The only debate over there is whether or not it's subject to the Gzera de Rabbanan of Tikra. The issue over there, they're not even deliberating whether that wood is acceptable or unacceptable. Everyone's in agreement that the wood is acceptable. It's just a question of how wide the wood is. So even switching it around is really not going to help much. Rabbi Meir Omer Afilo B'Meshicha. Okay, now, everything we've done up until now has been an analysis of Shitas Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda said that there is a mitzvah to be ma'agid, not just a mitzvah, an obligation. If you're not ma'agid, the lulav together with the hadasah ben arava, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. Good. That's Shitas Rabbi Huda. And the Gemara didn't go through this, but we went through this earlier in the Masechta. And what's the source of that? He learned it out through Gzera Shava, right? By the Agudas Ezov mentioned by Yitzias Mitzrayim. So there, the Torah spells out that it has to be Agudas Ezov. So here too, as well, the word connecting them, if I'm not mistaken, was ulakachtem. Right, that was a connective word connecting the two together. Anyway, that's all the Shita Rav Yehuda. On the other hand, Rav Meir says unnecessary because according to Shita's Rav Meir, it would be sufficient to just simply use anything to wrap it up because there's no obligation to wrap it up. It's just simply for the performance of Hidur Mitzvah. So, Tanya, we learned in a brisa, Amar Rav Meir, Ma'isa b'Yakira Yushalayim Shayu Ogdens, love him, b'Gimina Yashel Zahav. And this is going to sound awfully familiar because this is basically what we saw back in the Mishnah. In fact, it's going to be a little bit challenging to understand. The Gemara's citation of the brisa over here does not seem to be making any contribution to what we've already established. This debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. So anyway, well, fine, but the Gemara quotes it. So Rabbi Meir says, look, I'm watching carefully Yikir Yerushalayim. Yikirei means the Chashuvim in Yerushalayim. And they had their lulavim wrapped in gold. And obviously gold is a different min. So Amru lo, Misham Raya b'mino, hayogdeno somalamata. And again, the counter argument is you didn't look carefully. Because underneath the gold, So there was Mino. It was a palm branch underneath the gold. So if you would have looked carefully, you would have seen the palm branch underneath the gold, and the gold is there just simply serving as Noi. Now this part becomes very interesting because effectively in Rav Yehuda's response, there really is another min over there, meaning that his argument is that underneath you have lulav. Good, underneath you have lulav. But you also have zahav, you have gold right on top of it. So according to Rav Yehuda, who says that lulav tzarech eged, so why isn't it the gold is not violating the iser of Baal Tosef? So Rashi over here intimates the answer. You can see the Rashi over here. I'll read it inside. Rashi bimino ogdin osom lamata nimsa eged halayon lenoi ba'ama v'lo lehechsher mitzvah. So the gold around is just lenoi ba'ama. It has nothing to do with the mitzvah. Lefichach ainu tosefas la'avra Baal Tosef. And that's why you're not in violation of Baal Tosef. Now, what Rashi seems to be saying is that when you are clearly making differentiations between this is for the mitzvah and this is just simply for beauty, meaning I do have an eged underneath, and it has to be mino, according to Rav Yehuda. Good. That's l'shem mitzvah. I wrap gold around the outside of it. That's lenoi. Since that's lenoi, so therefore it does not violate Baal Tosef. Now, much to do with this Rashi over here, meaning that if you cannot make a clear separation between the two, meaning if it was just gold, so then it's an eged and it's noi. But because Rav Yehuda demands that it has to be another min, so that's violation of Baal Tosef. But it sounds like from Rashi that because you specifically said it's lenoi and you already have your eged, so then it's not a violation of Baal Tosef. Okay.
If you were to use material, there would be no Indian Baal Tosef. Let's say wool.
That would be according to Rabbi Yehuda, that would be Baal Tosef. Meaning, if that's the only thing you used,
it's correct.
That'd be a violation of Baal Tosef. Okay. Amar Luhu Rabba. Okay. So now for the remainder of today's daf, some specific instructions that were given by Rabba regarding the putting together of the lulav. Some of them are accepted. Some of Rabba's positions are accepted. Some of them are clearly rejected in the Gemara, and a number of them to end off our daf today. So number one, Amalu Rabba Lahanu Megadle Oshana. So the Megadle Oshana. Now Megadle over here says Rashi, don't get confused. It doesn't mean the growers of the Dalaminim. It means the ones who are just simply assembling it, the ones putting it together. Rashi says that you see the word Megadle on occasion means to put it together, and Rashi gives other examples. Anyway, so the Megadle Oshana. So the ones assembling, putting it together, the Bay Resh Galusa, and they're doing so on behalf of the Resh Galusa. Ki gadlisa roshana de Bay Resh Galusa, shayare bay base yad, ki heche de lo tehave chatzitsa. Here's what I need you to do. I need you to make sure that there's an empty area on the lulav, so that when they pick up their lulav, they're directly handling the lulav. Because if you put an eged around, and what they are now putting their hands on is not the actual lulav itself, but the eged, so then, they're not directly holding the lulav, and that is going to be a problem of chatzitza. Something that now is separating you and the lulav, and therefore it's no good. Now, Rashi over here writes that this instructions of Rabbah are as per the position of the chachamim. Meaning, did the lulav require an eged or did not require an eged? Meaning, if we held like Rav Yehuda, lulav tzarech eged, so the eged now is part and parcel of the mitzvah itself. So what do you mean, don't hold it by the eged? Of course, according to Rav Yehuda, you want to hold it by the eged, meaning the eged is part of the mitzvah. How can it can't call it a chatzitza? So that's probably what led to Rashi to the conclusion that Rabbah was assuming not like Rav Yehuda, like the chachamim, which is in fact the accepted halacha, that lulav ain't sarach eged. Now you do put an eged around it, but to beautify it. However, when you're handling it, so you want to make sure that your hands go on the lulav itself. This is the instructions of Rabbah. Now over here in this particular example, categoric rejection. Rav Amar Kol Lin Oso Einu Chotzeitz. Now, if the wrap that goes around is Lenoi, so Noi is not going to be a Chatzitza. If all you're doing is just simply attempting to beautify the mitzvah, you can't call that a Chatzitza. Okay, now it's interesting because moments earlier in the Gemara, so we said that as long as it's Noi, so then it doesn't violate Baal Tosef because we can view it as something external and independent of the item. Now, granted, by the way, that was within the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, but it's funny. In other words, when something is lenoi, so are we treating that as now becoming part and parcel of the mitzvah or not? The Gemara now has just stated, Rava just stated, that since the eged is lenoi, so even though you're handling it by the noi, But that's still considered part of the lulav. So, yes, I am personally a little bit confused in terms of whether noi is viewed and treated as something independent or something that is now part and parcel. Okay, I admit I'm confused, and if I'm just passing that confusion on to you, I apologize. The Amar Rabba. Okay, so that was the first statement of Rabba, but that statement certainly was rejected by Rabba. In other words, you're allowed to hold the lulav by the agad, despite the fact that Rabba announced to everyone, make sure to leave an opening. Okay, number two. The Amar Rabba, l'linkod in a shoshana besudra. Says Rabba that don't hold the lulav by a sudar. Now, this part over here is going to be a little bit challenging, admittedly. There is a lengthy tosus over here. Just tries to make sense of this, but I'll try to present the Gemara as clearly and as simply as possible. He says that do not hold the lulav by a sudar, by a handkerchief. Now, what you're doing over here is you're wrapping your hands with a handkerchief and you're holding the lulav. Sounds something like that. But let's read on a little bit more. The problem with that is that the Torah says, it has to be lekicha tama. It has to be a complete lekicha. Meaning the Torah's instructions is that you have to take the lulav. Since you have to take the lulav, so that means that your hands have to be exposed. They have to be visible. So, and Rava amar lekicha yidei davar acher shma lekicha. And Rava says no. In other words, when you're taking something, al yidei davar acher, and even though you're taking it via a handle, that is still considered a lekicha, that's still considered like you're taking something. Okay. Now, the problem with the Gemara that we just learned together is the following. You'll notice that we just saw two instructions of Rabba back to back. Number one, make sure that when you take the lulav, you got to be holding the lulav itself, meaning the eged will serve as a chatzitza. Good. That was statement number one. The second statement of Rabba that we just learned together is that, well, don't wrap up your hands. Why not? So what you would have expected Rabba to say is because if you wrap up your hands, you know what that's called? It's called the chatzitza. But the Gemara didn't say that. The Gemara says that if you wrap up your hands, it's a failure of lekicha tama. Why didn't the Gemara use the word chatzitza? Like it did in the previous statement. So this obviously serves as a difficulty, and Tosa spends a lot of time and effort and energy trying to understand why in the second statement with the handkerchief, Why didn't he use the word chatzitza? Why did he say it's a failure of lekicha tama? So what Tosfos ends up saying, Tosfos really tries a number of different pshatim, but what Tosfos ends up saying is the following. That in the case of the eged, so what we want to do is that we want to be holding the lulav itself. Now again, Rava ends up rejecting Rava's point because holding the eged is considered holding the lulav. It's lanoi, but if for a moment we're going to ignore Rava and we're just staying with Rava, Rabba says that when you're holding the lulav itself, and you don't hold the lulav itself, but you're holding something that is surrounding the lulav, that's a chatzitza. But Tosfos says, but the sudras, as far as the sudras is concerned, so what is the sudra? So I said moments earlier that you're wrapping your hands. Tosfos says, no, that's not correct. What the sudra is basically, it's a handle for the lulav. It basically is a way to facilitate handling the lulav, i.e., it's like a lulav holder. I don't mean the koshalach. I don't mean, you know, those really, like those manufactured palm fronds that are constructed like almost perfectly in order to be holding the lulav, the hadassim, the ravas. I don't mean that. I mean basically the plastic bag, right? The whole purpose of it is so that you handle the lulav. So Tosfos says that's what we're describing over here. It's not going to be a chatzitza because the whole purpose of why it's there is so that you can handle the lulav. So if the whole purpose is that you can handle the lulav, that is what's called now a lekicha. And the debate in the Gemara between Rabba and Rava is lekicha al yidei davar acher. Meaning, if you constructed a handle, is that considered lekicha, yes or no? Rabba says no. Rava says yes. But the reason, says Tosfos, why the Gemara didn't use the word chatzitza over here is because chatzitza is just simply N-A. It's not applicable. Because over here, I'm making this specifically for the purpose of handling the lulav. So the term chatzitza over here is just simply not applicable. That is Tosfos' understanding of why previously the Gemara used the words chatzitza, and over here the Gemara is talking about lekicha tama. Okay. Okay. Amar Rava. Continuing now in the Gemara, we're on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. We're about three quarters of the way down. Rava says, I want to prove my point. That if I create a handle for something, in order to handle something, that is called lekicha. How do I know that? So we're going to go through a couple of Mishnayos in Parah. Number one, Mishnah number one. Two Mishnayos together. Am Rav Amana minala delikicha ide davarachish malikicha did not. Ezov katzar misapko b'chut v'kush v'tova umala v'ochiz be'ezov umazem. Okay, so number one. Okay, so people walked around from town to town with the solution of the ashes of the paraduma, together with the spring water, the Mayim Chaim. Now the instructions are very clear in the Torah. You take an azov and you dip it into the solution and you sprinkle it. Okay, now if you can imagine, so now I got this water in basically a cylinder. It's a really long cylinder, and over the course of time, obviously the water's all the way on the bottom. In other words, after multiple usages. So I have a little bit of water, but it's down there on the bottom. So I take my azov, and the cylinder is really narrow, and my hand can't get all the way down. My hand can't get in, so I'm just sticking the azov into the cylinder, and I'm picking it up, and I find no water. Now I know there's water in the cylinder over there. It's all the way on the bottom. Okay, so what do I need? I need an extender, a little extension. So what the Mishnah allows me to do is to tie a string. Then attach the string to the azov, and now allow me to dip it in. Now the Torah says very clearly that has to be a lekicha. And over here, is it a lekicha? So the Mishnah Parah says yes. So amai v'lakach v'tavel amarachmana. So elav shmamina lekicha ide davarachish malekicha. So now what we have seemed to have concluded is that it's a handle for the azov. And that will satisfy the obligation of lekachtem. Lekicha is in fact considered a lekicha. Wonderful, right? Mimai, the Gemara says, I don't know. Dilma shani hasam kevin de chavrei kegufei dame. Gemara says, when you tie the string to the azov, so it's more than just a handle. It's now one entity. So I don't know if you can really call this lekicha ayde davar. Because what we're really looking to ascertain is that when I'm creating a handle that I can move and remove, I can attach it and detach it. That's the kind of handle that we're looking at right now. And if I'm tying the string over to the azov, that's not really considered. That's more than a handle. That's considered like one entity. Okay, so the Gemara says you're right. So that Mishnah and Parah is not gonna get us to a conclusive proof. What will? Well, maybe the next Mishnah and Parah. So Elamehacha Nafal Mishvavers L'Shokas Pasul. So Ha, to turn the top of the Amud base. Ha hi pilu hu kasha. So over here now we're at the stage where I'm adding the ashes to the water. Now the correct the recipe calls for that first you put the water into the kli and then afterwards you put the ashes on top of it. Okay, and Rashi goes through all the drushes and we're gonna go through the short version of this discussion. That's the order. First Mayim Chaim, then the Afer. Now the Torah says that you have to take the Afer and you have to put it into the water. Now, lekicha would mean what? It would mean that if I have this bowl of ashes, I got to take my hand, put it into the ashes, and then take that and put it into the Mayim Chaim, put it into the spring water. That's what it would seem to be. And meanwhile, what the Mishnah and Parah says, now again, the Mishnah and Parah over here, it's a diuk in the Mishnah and Parah, but the basic point is that if I take the ashes, the container that the ashes are held in, and like a shaker, like a salt shaker, I then turn it over and pour it into the water, that works. Even though the Torah says, v'lakachtem, that you have to take it. So what is that telling us? So the Gemara says, Shema Mina, we're on the very top of Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, Amai, I'm starting from the top line, v'lachu v'nasan amrachmana, there's an obligation, l'kicha. So Elav Shmamina l'kicha ide davar chishma l'kicha. Oh, because do you know what that bowl is that's holding the ashes? It's a handle. It's a handle that helps me in terms of handling the ashes. So even though I'm not handling the ashes itself, I'm only handling the bowl. That is a satisfaction of the requirement of l'kicha. Okay, so this would be a much better proof and a conclusive proof that lekicha ayde davar acher is in fact considered a lekicha. Okay, and we don't get the back and forth, meaning Rabba seemingly disagrees. Or maybe, and again, the Gemara doesn't say, so it's going to be a little bit of speculation, or maybe Rabba will tell you that Mishnah and Parah is different and there's some way to differentiate between the Mishnah and Parah and our discussion over here. Okay, so 2 points now that we made in terms of assembling together the Hoshanos, meaning when we say Hoshana over here, we mean the bundle of lulav, hadassim, and aravos. So Rabbi said, number one, when you wrap it up, make sure that there's an area of exposure where you can actually touch the lulav itself. Otherwise, it's a chetzitza. The Gemara ends up rejecting that position. Number two is that Rabbi said that when you are making a handle for the lulav, well, that's going to be problematic because you're not, that's a lack of lekicha tama. The Torah says lekach tam, and that's a failure in lekicha. And again, Rava rejects that as well. Because lekicha ayide davar acher is in fact considered a lekicha. Okay. Next. We are on the very top of Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, ve'amar Rava. This is now going to be the third statement of Rava. So far, the first two statements of Rava were rejected. Am Rava lolodus inish lulava mehoshana v'dilma natri tarfe v'havi chatzitza. So, let's say Hadassim and Aravos are already in place. And now, oh yeah, the lulav, right. So what you're going to do is you're going to take your lulav and you're going to shove it right in between Hadassim and the Aravos. The problem is that because you shoved it in, so some of the leaves are going to get ripped out of the Hadassim and the Aravos. And now what you have are detached leaves and serving now as a separation between the lulav together with the Hadassim and the Aravos. And it's a chatzitza. So the Gemara says, Rava Amar Amin Bebino Nechotzis. Rava says, what are you talking about? Meaning chatzitza is when you have a foreign entity that is separating between the two. Here you have a hadas leaf and an arava leaf. And even though it's detached, but it's min bemino. And we have a rule throughout Shas, min bemino in Nechotzis. Similarly, so the third statement to Rava is also being rejected. Right? He's not having a great day, just in terms of acceptance of his statements. And Rava Amar min bemino nechotzitz. This is basically the same point, but from just like a different perspective. Okay, I do this all the time. The lulav is now in the well. Right, I try to avoid this, but the lulav now is in already tied together with the hadassim and the ravos. So the lulav is too long. You can't clip it from the top because that's nikdam rosho, and that'll pasul the lulav. You clip it from the bottom. The problem, of course, with clipping it from the bottom is that if it's already in a tied position, so you have all these leaves that are detached and now serving as a separation between the hadassim and the lulav, and the aravos and the lulav. Good. So Rabbi says that's a problem. It's the same thing that we had previously with the leaves of the hadassim and the leaves of the aravos. It's just coming now from the perspective of the lulav. And again, Rava says, I reject that premise. Why? Because the leaves of a lulav is min bemino, and min bemino are nechotzeitz. It simply doesn't serve as a chatzitza. Okay. Next. Amar Rava, hada shel mitzvah asa la'arich bo. Esrog shel mitzvah mutar la'arich bo. Okay. Let's go back to a point that we made early in the Masechta, Daf Tes, if I'm not mistaken, and that is the idea that the sukkah is muksa. It's muksa la'mitzvah. The sukkah is going to be the schach and even the noya sukkah are going to be now huksa l'mitzvah, which means that for the 7 days of sukkahs, you can't get any benefit from it whatsoever. Now, obviously, you go in the sukkah and you leisure in the sukkah, but for any other purpose, right? You hung up a fruit as noy mitzvah, so you can't take a bite out of it. You can't do that. So now, not only is the sukkah itself going to be huksa l'mitzvah, so are the dalet minim, meaning they're set aside for the mitzvah for no other purpose. Therefore, says Rabba, here's what you can do, here's what you can't do. The hadassim of the mitzvah, you can't smell them. Because they're huksa l'mitzvah, and you can't use it for any other purpose. Now, interestingly enough, the esrog you are allowed to smell. What? What's the difference between the hadassim and the esrog? He explains. My time, a hadass l'recha kai. So, because as far as the hadassim is concerned, what's the main usage of the hadassim? It's scent, it's aroma. So, ki aksei, me recha aksei. So then, as far as the status of muksa, the muksa is going on the actual reach because that's its principal usage. However, esrog de la'achila kai, but an esrog is concerned, what's its principal usage? Obviously, outside of the mitzvah, its principal usage is its consumption, its eating. Now, I know you and I are not really right outside of sukkahs. We're not jumping up and down, running to get our esrogim to eat our esrogim, right? It's not that particularly edible to us, but it's a fruit. It's an edible fruit, and so people eat it. So ki akse me'achila akse. So therefore, in terms of its muksa status is only going to be for its principal usage, which is going to be for eating. You want to smell the esrog? By all means, you can smell the esrog. The amar Rabba. This is obviously during sukkahs, the 7 days of sukkahs. The Amara Bahadas Bemechubar Mutala Rechbo, Esrik Bemechubar Asala Rechbo. So Rashi goes on to explain over here, this statement to Rabbah is not as it relates to Sukkot, but as it relates to Shabbos. And what we're describing over here is the smelling of Hadassim and Nesrogim as they are connected to the ground. Now, when it comes to the Hadassim, so you are allowed to smell the Hadassim as they are connected to the ground on Shabbos, but not the Esrog. So my time, Hadass el Ariach Kai, Yisharis Lei, Lo Asa Lemigzeh. Because as far as the Hadassim are concerned, in other words, the chief usage of Hadassim is for its smell. Okay, good. You smelled it. Great. That won't escape your mind. However, when it comes to the Esrog, you just smelled an Esrog on Shabbos. It smells delicious. Oh, you know what? It smells so good. Let me pull it off. And because the general usage of the Esrog is for eating, so therefore you're going to be forgetful, and you are in fact going to pull it off. So, Asalamigze, Esrog Lachilaka Ishar Slay, Asalamigze. The Amarabba, by the way, that was accepted by Rabba. The Amarabba, Lulav, Biyamin, V'esrog, B'smol, in terms of the handling of the Lulav and Esrog for the mitzvah. Lulav, you're going to be holding in your right hand. Esrog, you're going to be holding in your left hand. My time, Ahani Tlas, the mitzvah, Vahani Chad, the mitzvah. Because look at how many chalakim there are. When it comes to the Lulav, that's 3/4 of the mitzvah. So that you're going to be holding in your dominant hand. The Esrog is only 1/4 of the mitzvah. So that you're going to be holding in your recessive hand. So Amalei Rav Yirmalei Rav Zrika, my time Allah mevarchin and Ela on Tilas Lulav. So why is it that the bracha is only on the lulav? Meaning there are dalaminim over there. So why is the bracha focusing on the lulav? So Hol v'gavo mikulam. So the Gemara says because it's the tallest of them all. So the Gemara says v'ligbe la'esrog v'livrech. Okay. So if height's the issue over here, I got this great idea. Take the esrog and raise it up, and now make the bracha of Al Natilas Esrog. So Amalei Hol uvemino gavo mikulam. No. It doesn't mean that it's currently the tallest. It means that's in terms of how they naturally grow, the lulav comes out to be the tallest, and that's why the bracha is on the lulav. Okay, the answer to me is incomplete, meaning, okay, so it's the tallest, and therefore what? Meaning, you need all dalaminim, they're all ma'akiv zeh, and so just because now the lulav is the tallest, therefore it commands center attention for the bracha? Okay, so the answer of the Gemara is certainly the beginning of an answer, but obviously, there's got to be more to this idea that the lulav is in fact the tallest. Left-handed people of the world. So, what do you do for the dalminim? So, what you're going to do is it really depends of whether or not you subscribe to the Shulchan Aruch or you follow the Rama. Shulchan Aruch says that for left-handed people, still lulav in the right, the esrog is going to be in the left. The Rama says that it should be switched. All right, lulav should go into the left, and the esrog should go into the right. So it depends. Whether you're a Sephardic, whether you're Ashkenaz, and what's the yesod behind the machlokas. Great question. Great discussion. Not for our purposes over here. Let's begin the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah. Ve'heichen hayu menanin. Okay. So there is not nuin. Now the Gemara in a moment is going to ask the question. Why are you bringing this up now? Meaning we're right now discussing the dalaminim. Okay. I understand. Shake the lulav. Get good. But right now, we're giving definition to what are the dalaminim, how do you put them together, and now you're talking about the nanun, how did that come up in discussion? Gemara's going to ask that question. But, so, hold that thought. But right now, the Mishnah wants to know, when are we doing the nanun? So, it means to say that here's what the Gemara assumes that we all know, and that is that we're going to be holding the lulav during halal, and there are going to be parts of halal where we shake the lulav. Okay, so, when during halal are we shaking the lulav? So, behodu l'Hashem t'chila v'sof. So, you're going to do it when we say, hodu l'Hashem kitov kilam chasto. So, you're going to be doing nanu, you're going to shake it then, but t'chila v'sof. Now, what does that mean, t'chila v'sof? So, if you open up halal, you'll see that the perik of, one of the last prakim of halal, so the paragraph opens up with the words, hodu l'Hashem kitov kilam chasto, and it ends with, hodu l'Hashem kitov kilam chasto. Now, for us, it gets a little bit confusing, because what we do, our minagiz, is that for the first 4 psukim, so we keep repeating Hodu Hashem Kitov Kilam Chasto. But says Rashi, says Tosfos, that's not what the Gemara means over here. The Gemara means is that at the beginning of the paragraph where it opens up with Hodu Hashem Kitov Kilam Chasto, you do Nanu and then at the very tail end of Halel, where it's the end of the paragraph, where again it says over there, now we, our minhag is to repeat it 2 times, but there we also going to be doing Nanun as well. also Ana Hashem Oshiana, and also when we say the pasuk Ana Hashem Oshiana. Now that happens to be Besocha Perek. That's not the beginning. That's not the end. That's in the middle of the Perek, but for reasons which I'm going to articulate in just a moment, so we should be doing that new in there as well. That is Shitas Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai Omrim Af Ba'ana Hashem Hatzlichana. Not just for Ana Hashem Oshiana, but even for Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. I'm Rabbi Kiva. So far, I see Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Kiva says, "Look, right, machlokes is between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. When should you be doing Na'anuin?" So Rabbi Kiva says, "What's the best way to see how we follow? Look at the Chachamim. Look at the Gedolei Hador." And he looks towards Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua and Shaul, and you know, he peeks. Like, when are they shaking? So Shekola Ama Yumananim is Lavehim Vehim Lo Nanu Ella Be'Ana Hashem Oshiana. Really interesting. So here you have in Shul everybody doing the Na'anuin, presumably at other times. I'm venturing a guess during Ana Hashem Atzlichana. And meanwhile, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua are not shaking at that point in time. The only time they're shaking, aside from Hodul Hashem Ki Tov, is also an Ana Hashem Hoshiana, and that's it. Now, it begs the question, well, if Rabbi Kiva noticed it, didn't everyone else notice it as well? Meaning, why didn't everyone else also turn to Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua in terms of determining when exactly you should be shaking and when you shouldn't be shaking? I don't know. I don't know why Rabbi Kiva all of a sudden discovered this. Everyone else didn't discover this. It's a little bit strange. But anyway, but obviously the point of the of this episode in the Mishnah is to tell us, of course, that we follow like the halacha, like Beis Hillel, that the only time outside of Hodul Hashem, the only time that we are going to be shaking the lulav is only during Ana Hashem Oshiana, not Ana Hashem Atzlichana. Okay, we'll start with the Gemara. Naneah Mandik Hashmei, who's talking about Na'anuin over here? How did that come up in the Mishnah? So Hasam Kai, so the Gemara says what it really does is it connects us all the way back to the first Mishnah of the Perek, because in the first Mishnah of the Perek, so Kol Lulav Sheish Bo Shoshet Tfachim Kedei La'Naneah Bo Kasher V'Kamar Heichan Mena'anin. Because in the first Mishnah, we learned that the lulav has to be three tvachim high, kedela na'anea. We learn together, u kedela na'anea. It's an additional tefach. Said that the lulav has to be four tvachim. Why? Because you need it for the na'anuin. Oh, when do we do na'anuin? That's our Mishnah. So that's how the Gemara just connected the first Mishnah with our Mishnah over here. Okay, we're going to stop over here. Tomorrow, we'll pick it up with the Shtei Alechem, the Kifsei Atzeres, how to do the na'anuin. But I'll just end off today with the following. So why are we shaking during Hodul Hashem? And why are we shaking during Ana Hashem Oshiana? So there is no explanation given in our Gemara. Meaning our Gemara just simply says, that's when you shake. But no explanation is given. Tosfos over here quotes the following. You can see the Tosfos, Divrei Maskil, Hodul Hashem, Tchila V'Sof. And he writes, V'la Milsi. Ella behodu menaneh pam echa v'chei ma'ana Hashem Oshiana kebeis Hillel v'lo ma'ana Hashem Atzlichana kebeis Shammai v'tama de beis Hillel. The reason is the following. Tosfos, if you want to follow me, it's I'm about 8-9 lines down in the Tosfos. Af al pi she'in ana Hashem Oshiana tchilas haperek v'lo sof haperek menaneh mishum dechsiv. So we turn to a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, and we're all familiar with the pasuk. Az yiranenu atzei hayar. It's a similar pasuk in Tehillim. Az yiranenu atzei hayar lifnei Hashem ki valishbot es ha'aretz. Uksiv basrei hodul Hashem kitov kilam chasto. So by virtue of the fact that I have two pasukim back to back, one pasuk of the Yiranenu atzei hayar, the forest is going to sing and dance towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then immediately thereafter in that pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, hodul Hashem kitov kilam chasto. So there you have the renana of the atzei hayar. The leaves are shaking. Okay, good. So uksiv nami basrei, and again, if you just keep going in Divrei Hayamim, you're going to find v'imra hoshienu lo ke yishenu v'hainu yiranenu shemenanim asalula v'meshabchin v'hodu v'ana Hashem Oshiana. Okay, so and Tosho says and based on this string of psukim in Divrei Hayamim, so that is how we know that the appropriate times for these nanu and for the species to shake in song and praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be specifically during these times where We cite Hodul Hashem Ki Tov Kilam Chasto, and we cite the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us Hoshia, is going to give us salvation. Okay, good. There is just because of time consideration, Tosfos goes on to say that our minhag is that for the first four psukim, the Kal keeps repeating Hodul Hashem Ki Tov Kilam Chasto. So should we be shaking during that time, even though it's just a response, meaning we're not actually saying the pasuk. It's just a response to the Shliach Tzibur. So Tosfos says, yeah, we're going to end up shaking. Of course, that's our practice. We end up shaking at every time we have a response. What about the Shliach Tzibur himself? Meaning he's not saying Hodu Lashem Ki Tov. So should he be shaking? So we take kind of like a compromise position. For Pasuk 1 and 2, our minhag is that they shake, and then for the 3rd and 4th Pasuk, we don't shake. Whatever. Tosfos discusses it. It's a little bit difficult to understand, meaning for that 2nd Pasuk, where the Shliach Tzibur is not saying Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki Elam Chesto. So why is he shaking at that point in time? I don't know, but Tosfos says, but that's our minhag. That's we take that. Yeah, but the 2nd pasuk he shakes. Okay, good. That's our minhag. Okay, quickly a recap of today's daf. Point number one: lulav tzarich eged ain't tzarich eged. Good, a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. The halacha falls like Rabbi Meir in this regard. Lulav ain't tzarich eged. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, where lulav tzarich eged, if I put another species on, you're in violation of Baal Tosif. Now, when you wrap it up with the lulav, it doesn't have to be a leaf, it doesn't have to be a frond. It could be any part of the lulav tree. How do I know that? So that was the first part of today's daf. How, according to Shitas Rav Yehuda, you could use any part of the lulav tree. That was number one. Point number two of the Gemara today is that the Gemara then went through another round of the Machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Point number two of the Gemara today is a number of statements made by Rabbah. Right, I lost count. I should have counted. Okay. Anyway, a number of statements that are made by Rabbah, some of them rejected, some of them accepted. So the first round of statements by Rabbah were rejected statements. Number one, you have to be touching the lulav. You can't be touching the eged. The Gemara ends up rejecting that statement. Number two, don't use a handle to take the lulav. But I'm saying it like Tosos's conclusion. Don't use a handle to take the lulav. You must be holding the lulav itself. Because if you take a handle, so that is a failure of lekicha tama. And Rava says, no. Lekicha al yedei davar acher is in fact considered a lekicha. So this second statement of Rava is also rejected. How do I know that lekicha al yedei davar acher is considered lekicha? We went through two different mishnayos in para. Those two different mishnayos in para, the second one was more conclusive that if you handling something via a handle, via an item that was specifically made to facilitate its handling, that in fact would be good. Other statements by Rabbah. Make sure not to shove the lulav between the hadassim and the rava's leaves are going to fall off and they're going to serve a chatzitza. Make sure not to clip the bottom of the lulav because now you have these detached leaves which are serving as a separation. Both of these comments Rabbah also rejected because it's min bimino. And min bimino simply does not serve as a chatzitza. Okay, so those statements of Rabbah ended up all being rejected. Rabbah made other statements which were not rejected. Number one, the smelling of the hadas on sukkahs, you can't do that. Why? Because it's huksa l'mitzvah. The smelling of an esrog on sukkahs that you are allowed to do. Because even though it's also huksa l'mitzvah, but huksa from not eating it, not from not smelling it. On Shabbos, just the opposite. On Shabbos, you can smell hadas connected to the ground. You're not going to pick it up. You're not going to pick it out of the ground, but you're not allowed to smell the esrog. Why? Because then you're going to be liable to pick it up from the ground. Also, other statements by Rabbah. When you're holding the lulav in the right hand, esrog in the left hand. When you are making the bracha is going to be on the lulav. Why? Because it's the tallest. Okay. And then finally, when we conclude the daf today, so we talked about the na'anuin. Beishama and Beisola argue about whether you should be doing na'anuin during Ana Hashem Atzlichana. But outside of that, when do you do na'anuin? Hodu Hashem Ki Tov, beginning of the paragraph. End of the paragraph. And then, Ana Hashem Oshiana, also is when you should be doing Na'anuin. Okay, very good. Adkan.